the Chinese year of the Eastern Bluff.
Welcome to Talking Istanbulics with me, Yorma McGirko, and him,
Ray Mack. And as always, Shakers, we're sitting in our local juicer, James Joyce, our main sponsors. And as the lighter nights are creeping in, everybody, if you enjoy this podcast, please follow us. You hear this? Oh, bollocks. If you enjoy this podcast, please follow us and subscribe on the app you are on right now. We're bringing you this episode with the help of Grow Radio UK, home to the biggest selection of podcasts on your radio 24/7. Today's show is brought to you by Reader's Wife's Gentleman's Magazine.
Yes. Those great guys at Reader's Wives. This week's show is fuller than a middle-aged man with irritable bowel syndrome's abdomen after two sausage rolls. Bit of a personal story there today. We've got an exclusive interview coming up with Liam Neeson about superheroes and his new book. He'll be along later.
Looking forward to having Liam back on our show. And a good one. We've got lined up for you, folks. The usual, true or false. And we're going to start off right now, Shakers, with Morgan Freedman reading a poem from a listener about procrastination.
Okay.
Greetings, Shakers. Yorma and Ray have said that the old inbox has been quiet lately, so most of my recent poems have been autobiographical in their nature of late, and I'm still trying to come to terms with what happened to my wife and I in Canada last week, but an Indian man called Ravinder got in touch this week with a request. Remember, you can make requests for poems on any topic by dropping us an email at talkingistanbulics@gmail.com. So here is Procrastination by Morgan Freedman. I received an email last week from a big fan. Ravinder Singh was the name of this man. Procrastination was the topic he chose. But when I tried to write, my mind just froze. Such a nice note asking how was my week. It hit me that I've never met a Sikh. I started Googling Indian religions, and it really did broaden my horizons. Sikhs carry a dagger and don't cut their hair, reminding me that I'm getting itchy down there as the hairs regrow after removal. I apply some cream. Man, it feels unusual. I vow to myself, never do that again. Then the phone rings and it's one of my friends. He suggests a restaurant that serves good fish. I have a few hours to write if nothing is amiss. But my wife tells me about this great show, and 3 hours have passed before I know. Later in the restaurant, I clean up my plate. The drinks flow, and we stay out till late. The next morning's a write-off. I feel done. It's amazing how we suffer for fun. I watch the news, and then later the soccer. Man United are having a shocker. So I wake up on Monday, determined to start and search for inspiration deep in my heart, but nothing comes. I go back to Netflix. This procrastination just cannot be fixed. So, I do what I do best, write about my week, and put it all down using rhyming techniques. I feel sorry for Ravinder. I hope he don't scoff, but this was a project I just kept putting off.
Right. Procrastination, Jimster.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's that old joke, that, isn't it? You know, I bought a book about procrastination, but I've put off reading it. Let's.
What is it, Jimmy? Tomorrow, in theory, a mystical land where 99% actually of human activity, motivation, and achievement is stored. Never a truer word spoken. For me, Jimmy, that is absolutely gospel. I swear on my dog, everything is left for the next day or 2 days or 3 days or a week later. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I try to get as much done in a day as I can. But I don't know. There are certain things that you know you need to do. And then there are other things that, you know, you've got a bit of time for, and they're the worst ones. You know, if you've got 2 days to do something, that's easy, isn't it? But I mean, you know, I'm involved in trying to sell a property at the minute, and trying to deal with estate agents in Scotland and all the little things that are associated with that. I've put off that many things with it. I think I'm finally up to date with it now. But yeah, it's difficult, that one. But I thought that was quite cool of Morgan, actually, to write a poem about not having written a poem and did it as a poem. So thanks for Ravinder for that one.
Well, he's doing that. We're crying out though for some of the listeners out there to send us in something. He's fiddling about.
That was the first one, Ravinder, that anybody's requested anything for a while. Because otherwise, Morgan just says, you know, is it okay if I make something up that's happened in my week? Which is okay as well. But remember, whatever the topic, you can have a poem written for you and read by none other than Morgan Freedman.
Good old Morgan. No, seriously, Jimmy, back to that old procrastination. Seriously. Mm. My feckin' excuse always, Jimmy, is I can't concentrate as well as I should.
I am aware of this, Raymond.
I'm sure you are. I tell you. No, Jimmy. Seriously, pal. Do you know something? I'm laughing on the inside. Yeah. You're fucking hilarious.
Well, you said it, and I agreed. I was showing empathy.
Yeah, but you don't have to feckin'
anything. Because I was concentrating. Yeah, but it's true, Ray.
What did... What was that bloke again? Oscar? What did Oscar Wilde say? I never put off till tomorrow what I can do the day after. Yeah. True or false, Jimmy?
Yes, all right. Celebrity.
Let me get my little notings here, Jimmy. Ernest Hemingway's favorite juicer was called Slappers in Havana, Cuba, because he had a fetish and a huge want, urge, a hunger for the ladies of the night, hence Slappers, or simply Slappers, after the bar name he frequented.
Right, okay. Let me see. Well, Ernest Hemingway did spend a lot of time in Cuba, didn't he? I think.
I'm trying to think.
No, did he write Our Man in Havana, or was that Michael Palin? Mm-mm. In fact, it wasn't either of them. It was Graham Greene, I think. But it was a kind of Hemingway-style book. And he certainly did like bars, didn't he? Now, those women that you referred to, Ray, I think you'll find these days they're not called hookers or hoes or prosies or whatever you call them. Politically correctly, I always call them sex workers, Raymond.
Do you?
Yes, I do. I always call them sex workers.
Ever so, ever so subtle.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, just around the corner from James Joyce, just right, probably about 10 metres from where we're sitting now, there's
a
street of sex workers.
Yeah, but of different calibre, Jimmy.
Well, they might, some of them might.
They got langers, Jimmy. They've got big langers. They're different.
Well, they might
from
be.
That side of the street. Good
they,
boy.
They might be, but yeah. So he was into sex workers. Well, it's possible. It's probable, in fact, but he didn't go in a bar called
Slappers,
because that word slapper, that's a British word. That
is it?
Yes. Yes.
Big word in Dublin when I was working and living in Dublin.
Words cross over, don't they? Both sides of Irish Sea. It's a woman of loose morals who's often a bit
cross
aggressive.
The Irish seaman.
Yes. it's a kind of a woman of loose morals, isn't it? Who might just be a bit on the aggressive side as well. So I'm going to say he probably did go with sex workers. Probably enjoyed that kind of thing quite a lot, but he didn't go in a bar called Slappers.
Yeah, it's false. You're right.
I wish it were true, though.
You know, for a change, you've actually got one right. Sloppy Joe's.
So from Slappers to Sloppy Joe's. Very close.
It was his favourite watering hole during his time on the island. Yeah. When
I always think Sloppy Joe's sounds quite rude.
It's a good name, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
When Joe Russell officially opened his bar, Hemingway and his mob were enthusiastic regular customers, just like myself and yourself, in the James Joyce, not Sloppy Joe's. Sloppy Joe's derived, Jimmy, from the condition of the feckin' place itself, but it had great music. It was famous for its great music and cold drinks. Hemingway lived in Key West for, Jimmy, about 12 years, owning a house there.
In Florida.
With his beloved cat, in Cuba, Havana.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess he could go over there quite easily, couldn't he, and go to Sloppy Seconds or whatever it was called.
But for 12 years with his beloved cat, Snowball.
There you go.
Hemingway, American novelist, Jimmy, a little wee rant, short story writer, Nobel Prize for Literature in 1954. He held strong passions for deep sea fishing, big game hunting, bull fighting, and war. He drank like a fish, Jimmy, for much of his life, and even more so after, because of a disastrous safari, including a plane crash, which left him in constant pain. His son, Patrick, whom he introduced to booze at the age of 12, would also suffer drink problems as an adult. Now, here's something interesting, Jimmy. His family, very strict and religious, he wanted to become a soldier, but because of poor eyesight, instead, he became an ambulance driver in the First World War, later became a correspondent in the Civil War and the Second War, Jimmy, a correspondent. But most successful books are Whom the Bell Tolls, you know that. And
The Old Man in the Sea.
Yeah, okay, that was another one. And the other one was Farewell to Arms. Married four times, Jimmy. Survived two plane crashes, actually. And he was too ill to receive the Nobel Prize. His father committed suicide. Ernest received a shotgun for his 12th birthday, Jimmy. Get a load of that. His final years, he began to lose his memory, couldn't write anymore. And in 1961, he killed himself with a shotgun, just as his father, before him.
Right. That's some kind of, legendary literary figure, really. And I think a real life figure, kind of almost like a... an American Brendan Behan type, but there's some dysfunctional parenting going on there, isn't there? If, he introduced his son to alcoholism at 12 and his own father introduced him to guns at 12.
Exactly. Yeah, but
I got football
sure.
stickers when I was 12.
Yeah, so I just get a fucking shotgun. I got a peg gun.
Oh, yeah?
But seriously, this is something... Anyway, before I go into the last bit of information on Hemingway, you read any of his books?
I just told you, The Old Man in the Sea.
The Old Man in the Sea, classic, man. Okay, From Whom the Bell Tolls, back in the day, for my old self. But Jimmy, Grace Hall Hemingway's mother... she messed up his head, seemingly, by putting him in dresses as a child, flowery dresses and bonnets, and would always refer to her son, Shakers, Jimmy, as Ernestine.
Really?
Now, the story goes...
No wonder he was fucked up. I think today we would call that...
Exactly.
No, today we would call that misgendering someone, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we would call it misgendering.
But I don't know if it worked the other way around.
No, you listen to me for a minute, good chap.
See, I'm so politically correct at misgendering people, sex workers, all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you with your prosies and your whores and your sloppy seconds.
Those gammy, sloppy seconds. Funny people around the corner of James Joyce with their langers. No, they're totally different. Jimmy,
yeah. Disgrace. I think some of them might have been misgendered. Once or twice.
Seemingly, she said she wanted twins. Mm-hmm. So when she had a daughter and then Ernest, she pretended they were twins and put them in matching dresses. She even held his sister back from school for a couple of years so they could attend the same grade. Now, it actually makes sense why Hemingway rebelled against that identity and hunted, fought, womanized, fornicated, discarded like trash for the rest of his final days.
Yeah, isn't it just? I mean, that's really cruel. To be honest, it's also cruel to the daughter as well. You know, having to tell her to pretend.
Yeah, that family was definitely spooked.
Absolutely,
yeah, big time, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it certainly, you can see how it affected him later in his life.
How it all ended. Yeah. I mean, I wonder.
You're talking, yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the that old joke, really, about the you know, the whale loyal defunct. Whale oil beef hooked.
You're coming along, Jimmy. Hanging around with the Irishman too long, pal. Here, cheers.
Cheers. Little reference to episode 18 there, by the way. I saw that on Facebook just before we started today. I think Michelle Dolan had written that on Facebook, and it just reminded me that we did an episode called that last spring.
You keep Michelle out of it now, like a good boy. You don't take any heat to him, Michelle Dolan. Naughty boy, our Jimmy.
So, have I won then, or is there another question for me to...
Ah, you fucking won. Get on with it.
Well, loyal beef.
Loyal beef.
All right. All right. If you listened last week, you'd have heard our appeal for support for Ilona Jennings, whose family is suffering from the fact that America doesn't care enough to support its sick people beyond 10 days in a year, on top of the inhumane cost of healthcare over there. Thanks to people who have contributed, especially to help Ilona support her family as she recovers from breast cancer. And special thanks to our regular listener, Len Galvin, whose kind words as well as donation gave huge comfort to the Jennings family last week. That was really, really heartwarming. The whole family were delighted about that. Thank you. Thank you very much, Len. If you didn't listen last week, and just feel that you'd like to share the tiniest bit of the cream from the milk of human kindness, Ilona's daughter, Grace, has set up a GoFundMe account. And it would mean the world to these wonderful people if you would give the smallest donation to help them buy food and pay bills during this very difficult time. The webpage is www.gofundme.com, but you can also simply Google Ilona Jennings Cancer and you'll get to it straight away. That's Ilona, Ilona. So this link will be in the episode description. The link to this, anyway, will be in the episode description for this episode. And I'll post this on Talking Istanbulics Facebook page, and Ray will post it on the Black Milkshake Facebook page in case you don't remember any of this. On that note, though, if you're a con man from Nigeria and offer just for a small fee to exploit this this appeal that we're doing by offering to manage the GoFundMe account, or if you're a disgusting Nazi from Newcastle upon Tyne who thinks that the tragic events in Gaza are worthy of trying to recruit me to some kind of 1930s style anti-Semitism, I'd like to politely tell you not to bother listening to us anymore, and that I've blocked you all from my social media. Thank God, though, that most people who do listen to us, in fact, all the people apart from them that do listen to us, are genuine and nice. So it's always, always, always appreciated.
Good man, Joey. Well done. And good man for blocking. I mean, no fucking shite on this show.
Yeah,
and no
some horrible people around.
Yeah, absolutely. Indespicable. Not called for. Like I said, thank God most people do get in touch, and they are genuine, and they are really, really nice. Black Milkshake Facebook page, and like Jimmy said, Talking Istanbulics Facebook page
as well.
Spoken like a true man.
Okay, now it's been over 18 months, Ray. Can you believe that already? 18 months since we
did the fucking go.
I know,
Jimmy.
I know. Yeah. 2020. Is that 22? Yes, it is. 2022 was the last time that we had the acclaimed movie star Liam Neeson in for a chat. As Ray says...
Well, I mean, the man is busy, Jimmy.
Well, he is busy. He is a busy lad. Of course he is. But it's good that he can always spend the time to come in every now and again. So here's an interview that I did with him when I was on holiday about an exciting new project that he's got. Enjoy.
Liam, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here with us again. It's been a long time. And you're here to discuss your new novel, That Man. Can you tell us what inspired you to venture into the world of writing?
Thank you for having me on again, Jimmy. Yes, it's very exciting, but I'd say it's more of a graphic novel if we're going to split hairs.
So it's a comic book then?
It's a graphic novel.
Sorry, Liam.
A comic book is a very different thing. This isn't the Bloody Beano. This is art.
I'm very sorry, Liam.
No,
do
it's
go
fine.
On.
I mean, I was always good at drawing and things with pencils when I was a child, and I've always been a good storyteller.
A raconteur?
I said a storyteller, not a fecking racketeer. I just play gangsters in movies. It pays well, you know? But I'd always wanted to explore a character-driven narrative in that format. That Man is a project that's been brewing in my mind for quite some time.
That Man certainly sounds intriguing. Can you give us a glimpse into the storyline and the character?
Absolutely, Jimmy. That Man is a bit of a playboy character on the surface who experiences a tragic loss when his parents are brutally murdered and killed by criminals. Driven by a need for vengeance and justice, he transforms into That Man, a vigilante who's on a mission to rid the city of crime.
That must be quite a lonely existence for him, having to keep that secret.
Well, not really. I mean, he's got this loyal butler, Wilfred, who knows about all his late-night daring escapades, and he also makes the tea and stuff.
So what's that man actually like?
Well, he's very suave, handsome, about 6'4", ripped. He's wise, intelligent, strong with an iconic voice and brooding face, a bit like a cross between James Bond, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and Sherlock Holmes, but better.
Well, that sounds like a classic superhero origin story. How does that man differ from other iconic superheroes?
You see, that man is grounded in reality, unlike a lot of the same old superheroes in the movies. The thing is, he could be anyone. I mean, he lives a quiet life in his mansion. He could be me or you, Jimmy. He doesn't have any superpowers, so it's less of a cliche. He's just brilliant at fighting bad guys and solving crime. He wears a cape and hood to protect his identity, but it's also useful so he doesn't get mixed up with some of the lame superheroes like Spider-Man or Captain America. He's his own unique character. That man is highly intelligent, skilled in martial arts, and a technological whiz.
Sounds a bit familiar in a way.
That's the magic of it. It's familiar, but in a totally unique way.
Yes, I can see that. I mean, you mentioned his butler, Wilfred. Now, I'm assuming that he's quite a bit older than your protagonist, so probably doesn't get too involved in too many of the action scenes. Is that man lonely?
It's funny you should say that, Jimmy. When I wrote the first draft, it occurred to me that I needed a foil for him so that we could not only get excited by the action scenes, but also get to know him as a real person. I was visiting the circus, laughing at the elephants one day while listening to Robbie Williams on my Sony Discman, and I thought, what if the owners of this circus were brutally murdered and killed by criminals and left behind a son called Robbie, who was skilled as an acrobat, and that man became his guardian? During their conversations, he would see that the boy was driven by a need for vengeance and justice.
Fascinating.
And he could become a mentor to him, if you like, so that that man would have a human connection. And I didn't just need to show his thoughts in thought bubbles when he was having a shave. Clever, eh? A bit like Dr. Watson to Sherlock Holmes, but better at tightrope walking and whatnot.
Tell us more about the trials and tribulations that he faces.
Well, that man has a nemesis, you see. He's a vile and nefarious clown character called the Hoaxer, who brings chaos to the city. He's not just about physical threats. He's diabolical in his schemes, like when he attempts to poison the city's water supply. That man faces numerous challenges in his relentless pursuit of justice.
It sounds like a gripping storyline. The more I hear, the more I think it reminds me of something, though.
No, it doesn't.
It's Batman, isn't it? You've rewritten Batman.
Look, I didn't come here to be insulted. I was leaving anyway. Have you got any chocolate?
No. Listen here. Listen here. I felt, Jimmy, that you were jibing our Liam there and getting in a few digs, needling him, trying to ruffle his temper. I think so. And he's not to be taken lightly, our Liam, Jimmy.
No, it just did ever so slightly sound like he'd reinvented Batman.
No. A storyteller.
Wilfred the Butler.
Not a racketeer. This is not the feckin' Beano, pal.
He got a bit terse with me, actually. And that time I said to him, this reminds me of something. And he just cut me off and he said, no, it doesn't.
You better be careful. You better be cute around him. You know, he's got a serious set of good skills.
Yeah, no, he has. He has got a very good set of skills that could be very dangerous for for somebody like us. But actually, he was all right with that. We had a chat with him after the interview was done, and I think he'll come back on again. He's a nice lad. I'm not sure how successful his project will be, but who knows?
Black Milkshake, best posts of the week.
Post of the week. I just got to check my little mobile telephone here. Stick with me, good laddie. Dolores Hill in Darnall in Sheffield, England.
Hi, Dolores.
Hi, Dolores. A man and his wife were awakened at 3 a.m. by a loud pounding on the door. The man gets up and goes to the door where a drunken stranger is standing in the pouring rain and is asking for a push. Not a chance, says the husband. It's 3 o'clock in the feckin' morning, pal. He slams the door and returns to bed. Now, who was that? Asked his wife. Just some drunken guy asking for a push, he answers. Did you help him? She asks. No, I didn't, for fuck's sake. It's 3 a.m. in the morning, and it's blooming well, pouring down, pissing to the heavens out there. Well, you have a short memory, pal, says his wife. Can't you remember about 3 months ago when we broke down and those two guys helped us? I think you should help them, and you should be ashamed of yourself. God loves drunk people too, you know. The man does as he is told, of course. What the wife says, the man must obey, Jimmy. He gets dressed and goes out into the pissing, pouring rain. He calls out into the dark, "Hello? Hello? Are you still there? "Yes," comes back the answer. "Do you still need a push?" calls out the husband. "Yes, please. Yes, yes," comes the reply from the dark. Where are you?" asks the husband. "Over here on..." replied the drunk.
What did he say? I missed that last bit. "Over here what?"
"Over here on the swing." Swing. Swing.
Oh, God.
Don't you just love those stupid, silly ones? Yeah. The dafter they are, the feckin' better they are.
The harder they fall, I think they say, don't they? Something like that. Yeah, oh, great. Great.
So Dolores Hill in Sheffield, Darnall. Thanks a million.
Yeah, okay, thanks a lot. All right, that's all, folks, for this week. Kiss and Tell will be back next week, along with a newly freed from prison Honzi. Please subscribe to the show so that you can get the next episode automatically in your feed.
Slappers, thank you. Sorry.
Sloppy Joes, you call them, or sex workers. Yeah. Shakers, thanks. That's the one.
That's it. That's what he said. Thanks for your support, Shakers. Thanks a million for all your support. And if you can afford it, please donate to the GoFundMe. Check the episode notes for the address and copy and paste it straight into Google. Thank you.
Yeah, let's get those poetry requests in for Morgan Freedman. You name the topic and he'll write the poem. It's as simple as that. Same email, talkingistanbullocks@gmail.com.
Huge, massive, huge thanks to Reader's Wife's Magazine, Mark E.E., and our Chinese voiceover artist.
And Morgan Freedman, Liam Neeson, of course, and Eamon McAndrew.
See you all next week, Shakers.
Good skills.
Skills. Slappers.
Talking Istanbulics comedy podcast was brought to you by Ray Mack and Yorma Kiriko and was produced by James Kirk. No animals or copyright were violated during the making of this podcast. Talking Istanbulics 2024.